Well, going back over this past week, whilst we've had obviously some setback running through risk assets led by, the frothiest part of it, which was, tech stocks in the United States, where they had rallied in a sense way too hard, given, where the recovery's at from COVID-19. But the data that's been coming out of the United States is still holding together pretty well. Been waiting for the period where we start to see some setback in this because, obviously we've had a return to some restrictions in some states in the United States, and you'd expect that to come through, but it's not evident in the data yet. And even some of the leading indicators, so last week we had the ISM purchasing managers reports for August for both the manufacturing sector and also the non-manufacturing sector. The manufacturing sector PMI, which was expected to sort of top out around that 54.2 level that it got to in July, which was pretty good reading, actually went up further to 56. So it strengthened again. The non-manufacturing PMI, which back in July was way up there at 58.1, that has come back a touch, but to 56.9, which is still a very, very respectable reading. And then through the course of last week, we had a lot of focus, obviously, on labour force data in the US with non-farm payrolls coming up right at the end of the week. And these, admittedly, is helped by the participation rate coming back a bit in the United States. But we had another 1,371,000 lift in non-farm payrolls. That followed 1,734,000. So these are tapering back a bit. But in amongst it, we've got average hourly earnings data in the United States, which year on year are holding up at 4.7% year on year compared with 4.8%. So a bit like here, it's a recession where we've still got income growth, some of this coming obviously from government support. But the other stunning figure was the unemployment rate in the United States, which going back to July was at 10.2%. They expected that to come down to 9.8%. It went down to 8.4%. So this is not textbook stuff. The idea is that when you're coming out of the sorts of problems we've had with shutdowns relating to COVID-19, it's a long, slow recovery phase, and so you tend to have a stickily high unemployment. The US is giving a bit of a lie to that at the moment, so it's an interesting one. In amongst that, it's not all about the economy in the United States. A lot of it's focused on what's happening with politics and really the start proper over this last week or two of the presidential election campaign. And it's proving to be one of the more fractious election campaigns we've seen and is really highlighting the deep divisions that are there inside the United States as well. So, that probably is going to have some play, it's bound to have some play and greater play as we go out over the course of the next month or so, getting up to the November presidential elections. US this week could be off to a quiet start because it's Labor Day today. Interestingly, Labor Day in the past is the weekend where the US summer holidays are over. And in the past, it used to be when a lot of fund managers really get back to work and look at their portfolios. It's interesting how many times after the Labor Day weekend you had some quite interesting portfolio shifts by managers, simply because they've been on care by junior staff most of the way through the summer holiday break, and the senior guys come back once you get past the Labor Day weekend. So it'd be interesting to see what sort of portfolio shifts might start to occur over the course of the next week or so. This week in the US, as far as data is concerned, it's a quiet one. We've got things like consumer credit, which is slowly but surely lifting again after falling going back a few months ago. It's expected to rise about $13.8 billion in the month of July. We've got producer prices and CPI coming up for the month of August on Thursday and Friday. And these are just confirming that inflation is staying very low and is nowhere near the point where the Fed would say, we're starting to get some inflation pressure coming from the coordinated policy response starting to lead to reduction of excess capacity in the US economy. Nowhere near that point. And so we're looking at 0.2s, 0.3s, all the way through both CPI month on month and PPI. They're a bit of a bounce month. But the annuals on that, the annual headline CPI rate's going to be no worse than 1.2%. Core CPI no higher than 0.6. So, these are a long way short of the sorts of numbers that the Fed would like to see. And producer prices are still showing a pipeline of deflation. So the August PPI, the annual change on that's likely to be minus 0.3%. In China, it's an interesting story. Their recovery was the first out of the blocks, and then it just seems to have got a bit flabby. You're not getting anything like a V shape coming out of China with the recovery phase, and that showed with the data we had out last week. The manufacturing PMI and non-manufacturing PMIs, that's both the official readings of those and also the private sector cakes in surveys of those. And in the case of the official PMIs, the manufacturing PMI settled back to 51.0 from 51.1, so it's just sort of plateauing there. Bit better as far as services are concerned. Non-manufacturing PMI lifted to 55.2 from 54.2. And the cakes in survey, probably a little bit better. We had the manufacturing PMI for the cakes in survey actually went up to 53.1 from 52.8, whereas the services PMI flatlined at 54. It was 54.1 going back the month before. Also in China, it's a hard country to read at the moment because they are going through this phase of delinking from the rest of the world, saber rattling to some degree in their areas of interest in the South China Sea. We saw it again with a few more areas of our export trade to China coming under scrutiny again over the past week, and we weren't alone. They're picking fights still with just about everybody, and they're also trying to prove to the world that they're on top of things. There has been a resurgence of COVID outbreak, particularly in the western districts of China. But you would have seen the newsreel where they invited foreign journalists into Wuhan, where things were supposed to have started, and showed people cheek by jowl in swimming pools and going back to normal life. This is all part of the propaganda coming out of China now. Dangerous stuff because you can get resurgence, obviously, of infections when you start doing those sorts of things as a publicity stunt, which is basically the way China's running things at the moment to show its displeasure with the rest of the world, particularly any attempt to try and look at where this whole COVID-19 virus started. This week in China, as far as data is concerned, we'll have later on today, the export data for the month of August. That was okay going back to July. It was up 7.2% year-on-year, but expects to fade a bit to 7.1%. Imports, which speak of domestic spending in China, are actually still very, very weak. They were down 1.4% year-on-year going back to the month of July. They're hoping that might lift a little bit above zero to 0.1%, but nothing spectacular there. And we also have the CPI and PPI coming out later in the week. They've got a little bit more inflation in China than most other places. It's not going to make any difference. The CPI, which was at 2.7% year-on-year going back the month before, is expected to be 2.4% for the month of August. Much of this is down to, again, a lot of pressure on food prices. But their producer prices are still in deep deflation. So down at minus 2%, we think, for the month of August year on year from minus 2.4%. Moving to Australia, and a very interesting week in some ways last week, both in terms of data and, of course, we also had the RBA meeting. Looking at the data, obviously the key highlight last week was second quarter GDP. And it showed very, very weak GDP for the second quarter. Not by international standards. Many places have been far worse internationally, but by our standards, minus 7% quarter on quarter, taking the annual GDP growth rate down to minus 6.3% from plus 1.6% going back the quarter before. That is stunningly weak. And the weakness inside GDP was all to do with private spending. So every item of private spending was down. And the most spectacular, of course, was household consumption expenditure, where that was down over 11% quarter on quarter. And that's largely because of almost a shutting down of much spending on the services through the course of that quarter. The spending on goods wasn't as bad, but the spending on the services was particularly weak. Housing was down over 7%. We had parts of business investment spending down 6% or more over the course of the quarter as well. But inside that GDP, something else was interesting, and that was that the income measures of GDP were actually very, very strong, some of the strongest we've seen in recent times. For example, household disposable income went up 2.5% quarter on quarter. It's a long time since we've seen anything as strong as that. And that's the support payments that were coming through. And for many low-income earners, they got 60, 70% pay increases on the income support that came through, particularly if you happen to be unemployed. You got more than that. So we had this very, very large lift in household disposable income. And that was also dwarfed by the lift in company profits, which went up 15% quarter on quarter. This is the weird part about this downturn. It's income rich as long as the government's going to support it, whilst you've got this very, very large downturn in spending and also in production. The other part of this is a surge in the household savings ratio all the way up to 20%, something that none of us have ever seen in our lifetime, where Australians out of their marginal income are saving 20% of it. So we've got these unusual numbers which were coming there through the GDP. And for the RBA, who would have been aware that we were going to get some pretty weak numbers the day before, they left most areas of monetary policy unchanged except for increasing the term funding facility. And so they've extended that to 5% of lending assets for ADIs, and have committed to more spending in that area. And quite reasonably, there's no reason why they won't do that again at some point and extend that further. They also noted that they had spent some money supporting the bond market, but still not a great deal. Ever since they've had the target of 0.25% for the three-year bond yield, they spent $61 billion supporting the bond market, which in the scheme of things sounds like a big number, but is not really in the Australian context. So what we had from the RBA was a continuing commitment to keep monetary policy very, very easy indeed. There was reaffirmation of when things might change, not for a long time, because you have to see inflation starting to motor up well and truly through their target band, and the unemployment rate considerably lower than where it is currently. We had some more July readings coming through as well last week, and some surprises. Home building approvals had a jump of 12% in the month of July. This is before Victoria effectively shut down, moving into August. So wouldn't necessarily expect to see that repeated, but a pretty strong lift running through that, suggesting that recovery was underway until this second wave came through. We had international trade numbers, not quite as strong as where they've been over the last few months. They actually came back, still a huge surplus at $4.6 billion, but down from $8.2 billion. We saw exports starting to come back with issues relating to China. But imports actually had a surge, which speaks of people actually starting to spend more in the middle part of the quarter. And we had July retail sales, the final reading of that, which, notwithstanding Victorian spending being down 2% in the month, the overall amount was up 3.2% month on month, and was up 12% year on year. It was also a record for retail sales. So spending on goods is actually picking up very, very strongly indeed, supported obviously by the income support programs that we've got coming through. Noticed just over the course of the weekend too that we've had an extension on those thresholds for bankruptcy declarations that now that they're going to be in place, those thresholds all the way through to the end of this year. So another one of those factors which suggests that if we are going to see any issues with credit, some factors are still deferring it. The loan holidays from the banks, and if anything, the banks look in a position to extend some of those for areas where they do see some problems. Declaring businesses and the households bankrupt is going to be very, very difficult for quite some time to come. And on top of that, we've got a lot of income support. Admittedly, it's going to taper as we get a little bit further down the track, and that might start to produce some issues. But generally speaking, the support's pretty good there. This week in Australia, we'll get the NAB Business Conditions, Business Confidence surveys. They'll be shot. They're for the month of August. So that's where you had the whole of Melbourne in stage four and regional Victoria in stage three lockdowns through that. So going back a month, the business conditions was reading zero and business confidence was minus 14. They'll probably come back. We also have September Westpac consumer confidence coming out, minus 9.5% going back to the month of August. It'll be an interesting one to see whether some of the it's the toing and froing between different parts of the country now in Australia. We might even get a slight positive on that. July housing finance, which according to most institutions actually lifted again by about 2% after being up 6.2% the month before. So we are getting some resurgence running through housing finance activity, but obviously going to be tempered as we go further forward by the restrictions that are there in Victoria for the time being. Out of Europe, last week we had preliminary CPI, core CPI, same story as the rest of the world, very, very weak. And so the headline CPI is minus 0.2% year on year, down from plus 0.4 the month before. Core CPI fell to plus 0.4% year on year from plus 1.2, so no inflation to speak of running through Europe. Their unemployment rate came out for the month of July, and again, another one of these surprises where it's not going up as much as you'd expect. So it crept up another 0.1 to 7.9% from 7.8%, but not high in the scheme of things, although you've got all those definitional things around unemployment that we have here in Australia as well. But in July, we also had an indication that households are pretty cautious about how they're going to spend. And there was an expectation that retail sales in July in Europe should have been up about 1.5%. They fell by 1.3%. And that was being up 5.3% the month before. This week in Europe, we get investor confidence coming out for the month of September. It'll improve a little, but it's in minus territory. It'll go to about minus 10.5 from minus 13.4. We'll get revised Q2 GDP. Remember that our GDP was down 7% quarter on quarter. Well, the earlier versions of Q2 GDP in Europe were down 12.1% quarter on quarter. Gives you some idea of how we compare internationally. Incidentally, in the case of the UK, they were down 20% quarter on quarter. minus seven's awful for us, but it doesn't look quite so bad compared with those. So we'll get that revision to see whether it's been revised at all. The market doesn't think it will be. And we get the ECB meeting coming out on Thursday. There's not a lot of change coming through there. They've got the deposit rate for the ECB about as low as they can push it without sort of causing all sorts of problems for the banking system at minus 0.5%. So not really much change, we think, as far as that's concerned. So this week starts with that holiday in the US. You know, we've got the hangover from the beginnings of that tech blip in stocks in the US that will run through the first part of this week. But the data, still reasonably constructive for most countries as we go further ahead, so probably still some support.